Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of Legion of News is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric.
Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News!
Above the milkpacking district to the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon. This, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor, who is, even now as I speak these words to you, preparing information on a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
Thieves steal a Portland food cart. Pirate kidnappings are at a record high, and half of all Americans have some sort of pre-existing condition.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, without further ado, brace your innards! For this is Legion of News.
Good afternoon, I'm Dawn Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for Tuesday, January 18th, 2011. Portland police are hoping a tip will lead them to a food cart stolen out of the LA Food Carts Pavilion on South...
I'm sorry, the where?
I don't know, some kind of a...
You sounded like one of those AAA aardvark American companies that tries to get themselves at the front of the phone book.
That's what it looks like here. It says capital A, capital L, space A. It's probably Allah.
Is this from one of our Middle Eastern brothers?
No, it's...
Or just a guy who can't spell.
Yeah, this was typed by someone who works for a local news...
Someone who doesn't have a copy editor.
...thing in Portland.
Okay, all right.
Anyway, it was a food cart pod at Southeast 50th and Division. The thieves entered over the weekend through a locked gate. It was sometime on Sunday night, they believe, cut the cart's gas line, and took off with the trailer. The owners told police the cart was brand new and worth roughly $35,000. Azul's Mexican food cart is 18 feet long and dark blue with three flip-up serving doors. If you happen to see it somewhere, you might want to call Portland police.
Seems like it's not really going to be in a guy's living room, though. There's a finite number of places where you could put an 18-foot-long food cart.
Yeah. Yeah, it's either just sitting out somewhere waiting for to be discovered, or these people actually knew what they were doing and have some kind of a large garage facility in which they're hiding it and
some
repainting
sort of a,
it or cutting it down for parts
some
or
sort
something.
Of a chop shop operation already set up.
For food carts.
Okay.
A food cart chop shop.
You know, here's the thing.
Which
I have
to say,
I'm not trying to encourage crime. And, of course, you know, this is a small business person. And so we hope that they, you know, that they recover the cart and everything turns out properly. But I will say that if somebody did have that idea, if somebody created some sort of a stealing and parting and fencing operation just for food carts, you've almost got to give a little bit of a tip of the hat there, a tip of the criminal chapeau, and say like, well done, you know, because like in this world, as Paul McCartney would say, in this ever changing world in which we live in, with multiple prepositions, it is all about finding a niche, you know, it's all about finding something that hasn't been done quite that way before and doing it as well as you possibly can to the best of your ability.
And if you're going to set up a food cart chop shop, Portland is the place to do it.
That's right. And Rick Emerson would like a slice for giving you the idea if you did not already have this notion. If you create one now, Just let a little brother wet his beak.
But if you take a slice of it, then you are an accessory, and you could get in trouble as well.
No.
Are you willing to take that risk, Rick Emerson?
No, I'm just saying it's
to
a slice of...
walk on the criminal wild side?
Just to get, a verbal honorarium, perhaps.
Sort of like a finder's fee or
exactly.
a patent license.
It's like that thing
something.
Where it's like where you leave the money on the nightstand table, but it might just be so the whore can get in-room movies. Not for the sex.
In case she wants a snack later.
That's what I'm saying. It's like in case she wants to use the minibar, and you're just being generous. Or like one of those chicks that just, that says she needs help paying the rent this month.
A man who is suspected of breaking into several cars along South Barlow Road in Canby was arrested Sunday after neighbors tackled him. Gregory Clausen is being held at the Clackamas County Jail on a parole violation. Clackamas County deputies say they responded around 8 p.m. on Sunday. When they arrived, they found Clausen had been tackled and pinned down by two men. Tyler Freiman said he was cleaning up from Sunday night dinner at his girlfriend's house when he saw Clausen sitting in her SUV. He says he dropped the bags of garbage and chased after Clausen. He then says his girlfriend's father also joined the chase.
I'm sorry. Clausen was sitting. Why? Who got tackled and why?
Well, apparently this guy has been breaking into cars in Canby.
Okay.
And this fellow was washing dishes. And he saw the car breaking in fellow.
Sitting in a car.
In his girlfriend's car.
Okay, so it wasn't in his own car.
No.
It was like, hey, who's that guy in my girlfriend's car? Oh, it's him. Okay.
And then he dropped the bag of garbage he was holding. He said, hey there, he said, and he dropped it, and then he sprinted towards the evildoer.
Awesome.
And the girlfriend's father also joined in the chase. After he short chased down the driveway, Clausen was tackled. They said he struggled. Freiman said, I choked him out, and he went unconscious.
Fantastic.
He woke back up, and then he tried to stand up.
I hope he choked him out again. If you choked a guy out like that, you would probably be tempted while he was unconscious just to give him a little what for in the ribs as well, Because it's like he's not going to be able to swing back, and you know that you're in the right because he's a cop, or, you're a good guy and he's a criminal, rather.
Right.
And so, and it's like the cops are automatically going to take your side of the story. Who's this guy? Hey, I caught the guy who's been breaking into all those cars. How did his ribs get broken? It must be a pre-existing condition. And then the cops say, I understand how you... I know what you're... I'm picking up what you're laying down, sir.
Or it just accidentally happened when he fell.
Yeah. It was,
several times.
Or God just made him with frail ribs. Manufacturer error.
So they believe that he may be responsible for at least four other car prowls in the neighborhood. Although car prowls always sound like... I don't know, like the guy's a cat burglar. Or they're taking the car out and just driving it around the neighborhood really slowly. What they mean is like people breaking into cars, but car prowl.
Car prowl sounds like
a bad phrase.
It's either like he's just sort of getting it instead of rolling it down the street, and then bringing it back later, or that he's just sort of rooting around inside, or maybe just getting a cat nap or something. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. It is Tuesday, January 18th. 2011. You can get this program later on the day via iTunes, also as a direct MP3 download here, or at legionofnews.com, and also on your mobile device. That is mobile.cascadia.fm. Mobile.cascadia.fm. Here is Don Taylor.
When you have a moment, would you hand me the papers behind you? Thank you so much. The Boston Blazers lacrosse team is apologizing for a racy Saturday night halftime show featuring scantily dressed women giving lap dances to the team's mascot.
Awesome. What's the mascot?
I'm really not... Oh, his name is Scorch.
Is he a Buccaneer?
They're the Boston Blazers. I don't know. Maybe he's like a big flame. I have no idea. I foolishly did not go online to look at the YouTube video of the dancers gyrating in front of the guy in the mascot suit, probably because it would give me nightmares.
It seems like there's some sort of a joke to be made here about... Something about, are you experiencing a fiery sensation? Or is there some sort of a burning sensation? No, I don't have anything.
One of the team's fans wrote on the Blazers Facebook page, as season ticket holders, we felt that the halftime show was completely inappropriate for a family atmosphere. Shame on you. A video posted on YouTube shows dancers taking turns gyrating in front of and on the seated mascot, Scorch, while an announcer bellows, what do you think?
Give it up for the ladies. Your dancers are Jasmine, Bella, and Tiffany.
The team issued a statement saying the entertainment was clearly not executed according to plan.
Don't forget two for one, guys.
Not sure what the plan was.
Belly up to the rail.
I'm sorry. What is the team?
The Boston Blazers lacrosse team.
All right. So
here's Scorch. He's a guy with a big round white head.
He's a match.
And I guess he's supposed to. Oh yeah, I guess he is. Okay.
Boston Blazers. By the way, it auto finishes all the way. It finishes to strippers. Let's see. Cross. Yeah, I'm looking at this right here. Yeah, so he's a So I would say that he's a match head of some kind, I think.
Okay.
All right. Well, in any event,
the team president said that they were extremely disappointed with elements of the halftime show. We had intended to provide an entertaining and fun halftime environment for our fans, but that is not what transpired.
Let's just say this, Brad. I don't know if anybody has seen this. If you go online and you look at Scorch, who is the mascot for the Boston Blazers lacrosse team, he looks decidedly sinister.
Yeah.
I'm looking at the guy in the mascot costume, and that's one thing. But if you look at the actual logo itself, where it's sort of hand drawn, it's like a pen and ink drawing. Scorch looks like a guy who's going to come and date rape your sister.
It's a really lame mascot, too. I mean, granted, they're a lacrosse team, so I suppose they don't have a lot of money for a mascot. But this is one of those things where it's just a guy in an outfit and then a giant head.
Well, it's
not a full costume.
He's just a guy with red hair, basically.
It looks like whoever the bad guy was, I can't remember the name, in The Incredibles, voiced by Jason Lee.
Syndrome.
Yeah, he's got hair like Syndrome.
Yeah, no, I could see that. By the way, I'm looking here at the Google image results. So the first few are of, like the Boston Blazers logo, and then it's like, players. And then there's two of Scorch, and then I swear to God, it's just huge chicks. It's huge bosomed chicks in revealing clothing for the rest of the page.
Yeah.
Well done, Google.
The team president said the dancers were not actually members of the Blazers dance teams.
They were just some sluts that they found.
They were fans who volunteered for a halftime promotion.
I wonder if these were women with a mascot fetish of some kind.
Oh God.
Yeah.
We
keep talking about trying to come up with our own fetish to market videos of mascot sex.
Well, mascot sex. Are you sure that's not just a subset of furries?
Well, there's money in subsets.
Okay. The Blazers are one of 10 teams in the National Lacrosse League. Parents often bring their children to see the games. One fan complained on Facebook, "An absolute disgrace to the Blazers. Brought my 11-year-old cousin, my boyfriend, and his 8-year-old son to a lap dance."
Yeah.
"You try explaining to my kids what they were doing to that mascot."
You know, here's the thing. They're either going to get it at the game or out on the street. And, really, if you're going to learn that sort of thing, I mean, what better place than at a lacrosse game with your father? I mean, I guess it's one thing if mom is there and then dad has to explain to the son what the lap dance is and then has to explain to the mom why it is that he knows what the lap dance is. And then it just becomes layers of awkward. This really is like a $5 mascot costume, though. I'm looking at this. Here's a picture, of course, of Scorch posing with some zany morning DJs somewhere. And apparently, according to the caption, "Fans, both young and old, Don, love Scorch, the Blazers mascot." So,
all right.
There's a fine picture I found of Scorch just standing in a hallway somewhere with his arm around one of the lacrosse cheerleaders with this big, weird, scary, smirky head.
Now, again, are we sure that that's a cheerleader or just some girl that he picked up like at a video poker machine somewhere?
Well, she is wearing the outfit, but that doesn't mean anything.
No.
Because apparently they have fans that are willing to do lap dances in front of hundreds of fans.
You know that guy who took his sled right into the front of a Chrysler yesterday was wearing a Jets outfit. I don't necessarily know it means he was on the team. So it just could just be maybe this is something that needs exploring. The idea that there is a sort of sub niche to the furry world.
Of people who are specifically...
Because then it's a tactile thing as well, because then it's like a foam rubber sort of a thing.
But it's particularly... it's not even just big animal suits. It's specifically sports mascots.
Yes, exactly. All right, I'm going to write that down for further study. All right, here's Don Taylor.
Can you be arrested for drunk driving if you're on a mule?
Wait.
Rick Emerson?
Because it's a news story, I'm guessing sources point to yes.
You can be if you are in Texas.
Fantastic.
Samuel Olivo Jr. said he had his mule and horse impounded by police in Austin after having too much to drink. Olivo got his animals out of impound, and he says he's learned his lesson.
As though there's any other cut it could be. Is this Mule 01?
It would be, yeah, indeed.
I know not to drink nothing at all when I'm on my animals. That was a pass. I'm going forward, you know what I mean?
I'm so glad that when I prepare these sound bites, I'm half asleep, because then it's like I'm hearing them for the first time later on. Hold on, let's just everybody.
Oh, please.
Let's all get a hold of ourselves here. Okay, let's brace ourselves. All right, can you give us the setup for this one more time?
This would be Samuel Olivo, who had his mule and horse impounded by police after he was riding around on them drunk. He got his animals out of impound, and he says he's learned his lesson.
I know not to drink nothing at all when I'm on animals. That was a pass. I'm going forward, you know what I mean?
Clop thing at the end.
That's awesome.
That's fantastic.
I learned not to drink nothing when I'm on my animals.
It's like he's being followed around by Robin Squire. So he had me until halfway through the soundbite. He learned not to drink nothing on his animals. That was a pass. I'm going forward.
That was the past. He's going forward.
Oh, not the past. Not the past. I thought he meant like they gave him a pass.
No.
Like they sort of said, well, you know, we'll let you go this one time, sir.
I believe he is saying that his drunken mule riding
his
is behind. Those days are behind him now.
All right.
Olivo thanks the public for getting his animals out of impound.
I want to say thank y'all very much from the bottom of my heart. You know, there's no way I could have made it without him. You know, it's just. Words can't describe what I'm feeling. I know not to drink nothing at all when I'm on my animals. That was a pass. I'm going forward. You know what I mean?
I think words describe his feelings perfectly.
Oh man, that couldn't possibly be a naturally occurring sound effect at the end of this soundbite, because that implies that he sort of timed it to, like, you know, and now away to Iskandaria, you know, and it's like, and
this is me. This is me riding sober.
And then
clip clop clip clop.
And then then the mule is sort of like poised to go. Cuz this is not a thing, like the mule had to be in on it to make this soundbite work properly, right? Like he had to sort of give his sign off line. That was the past. I'm going forward. And now I ride. And then the mule actually had to start right at that moment, so there's no lag, cuz listen,
I know
just
not to drink nothing at all when I'm on my animals. That was the past. I'm going forward, you know what I mean?
Oh, that's golden. All right, fantastic. We should play that 500 or 600 more times today.
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, that makes me happy.
You're listening to Legion of News right here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. The Rick Emerson radio program coming up next hour at rickemersonshow.com. Coming up next hour, we have your Geek Watch, also your Clown Watch. We've also got...
We also have a Religious Nutcase Watch.
And a Religious Nutcase Watch. That's coming up next hour. We'll do the second round of the... We'll do the second round of the... We'll do the second question of the first round of the second version of Name That Snack. That was the thing. We really had to take it back to the shop and repaint it several times. We've also got a top five coming up next hour on the Rick Emerson radio program. It is the top five sections, specific portions, moments in songs with which everyone must sing along. Maybe not the entire song, maybe not even the hook. It is the top five portions or moments in a song with which everyone in the room, no matter who they are, regardless of race, color, religion, creed, background, or national origin, must sing along. So that's coming up next hour at rickemersonshow.com. Here is Don Taylor.
The government's newfound civility is about to face its first big test as Republicans prepare to start redebating health care reform, i.e., they don't think people should have health care, so they're trying to take it away from everyone. A federal survey set to be released today will give them something else to talk about. The number of Americans excluded from private coverage because of pre-existing conditions. According to the report, up to 129 million people, or half of Americans under 65, are ineligible for health insurance because they suffer from illnesses that major insurers consider a basis to charge customers higher prices or exclude them from coverage. To come up with this number, researchers from the Health and Human Services Department estimated that one-fifth to half of elderly people have medical problems that led to rejection or higher premiums, and then included a number of other ailments that can also trigger insurance exclusions. But the analysis is already under attack from Congress, of course. Republicans and industry spokesmen have criticized the findings as overblown and lashed out at the notion that rolling back health care reform would target people with pre-existing conditions. When a new analysis is released on the eve of a vote in Congress, it's hard to view it as anything but politics and public relations, said a Republican House aide.
I know not to drink nothing at all when I'm on my animals. That was a pass. I'm going forward. You know what I mean?
I'm going to bring that in at slack moments to provide a little levity for today's program.
Yeah. Because if you're going to believe anybody when it comes to, analyses and numbers about the healthcare industry, Republicans and people from the insurance companies are really the ones that you should trust.
To be fair, I'm not going to believe Democrats either. I mean, just if it's all the same to you, I'm going to disregard anything said by anyone, from any political party about this.
Pirate kidnappings, by the way, have hit an all-time high.
Is this part of healthcare? Is this a pre-existing condition?
No.
Like a guy just comes in and he's got a cannonball hole through the middle of him?
It could be. It's a completely different story, but they could be related in some fashion.
He's been keel-hauled and he just finds that his HMO isn't. There's no in-network provider to take care of him.
The number of people who have been dropped from their insurance companies because they have scurvy has just skyrocketed in 2010.
Hey, can I just tell you this? Let's just talk about scurvy for a second. Scurvy was the nickname that a friend of mine gave his unlikable cousin when I was growing up. And so whenever I hear scurvy, I immediately picture this brunette girl who's about 5'3". And it takes me a second to actually transition into realizing it's a disease. Doesn't scurvy seem like it's one of those things that should have shown up in an episode of House by now? And
yeah.
I can say this definitively because I looked it up. There have been no references. I mean, there have been references to it, but there have been no occurrences of scurvy on the show, which it seems like scurvy is a disease that's custom made for House because it would allow for a whole lot of like, there hasn't been a documented case of scurvy in 85 years. And then, you know, and then somebody makes, you know, well, you better call Guinness and also, you know, get some hemoglobin, you know, or whatever. It seems like one of those things that I imagine they've got a stack of strange but possible diseases, things that could occur, but that probably won't. And that is the confluence, that's the intersection where that show lives.
Yes, next week, a firefighter is diagnosed with dropsy.
Are you making that up?
Yes.
Okay.
No, nobody has dropsy.
I don't know what dropsy is.
I think that was just one of those things that they would call...
Like consumption?
Yeah. If you had, like something was going bad, they would just say you had dropsy.
Okay.
I think that meant something was full of fluid.
Okay.
Anyway, pirate kidnappings hit an all-time high last year.
Who would want to kidnap a pirate?
Well, no, the pirates are doing the kidnapping.
Ah.
Pirates captured 1,181 hostages and attacked 53 vessels internationally. All but four were off the coast of Somalia. These figures are for the number of hostages and vessels taken. They're the highest we've ever seen, said Pottengal McCundan, head of the International Maritime Bureau.
Hingle Glarb Glungendang.
His first name is Pottengal. He called the situation alarming. Last year's 445 attacks marked a 10% increase from 2009, and analysts say that though naval police are patrolling the waters near Somalia, pirates are starting to move further offshore.
Hingle Frank Zinkengarb.
Last week, a separate report from the think tank One Earth Future estimated that pirates cost the global economy $12 billion a year.
Okay.
Damn those pirates.
I know that piracy is a real thing, and I shouldn't just be thinking of, like, the pirate guy from the McDonald's menagerie or whatever, you know, and piracy is bad. But I just, there's nothing I can do about it. There's like, F all I can do about piracy from my, and I'm not even going to say, like, from my seat here in the studio. It doesn't matter where.
No, you'd be sitting anywhere, really.
Yeah, there's really nothing I can do from any vantage point in the world. Piracy is something I can do absolutely dick about that. So I just, it's not that I don't care. It's not that I don't care. It's that I think I am opting not to care because really there's just there's no way in which I'm going to be able to contribute to the eradication of piracy. I do like the fact that you went right from scurvy to pirates, though.
Yeah.
That was impressive. Well done there. All right. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Still to come this hour, we got your entertainment news, also science on the march, etc. Here is Don Taylor.
I've been thinking about scurvy a lot lately.
Really?
So yeah. Well, yeah, I'm listening to that...
Blood gushing out of your mouth and you're trying to pinpoint the cause?
No, I'm listening to the audiobook of that Bill Bryson book. And he did this whole thing where he was talking about scurvy and how no one knew. It took like decades for them to figure out what was causing it.
Yeah.
And they would do these, you know, tests where they would pair up pairs of sailors and, like, you guys get dairy products and you guys get lemons and limes and you guys get bread. And they come back and then everyone except for the guys with the oranges is sick. But then the fellow who's doing the research, his theory was that it was bread. So he just didn't believe it and he just ignored it. And it wasn't until Captain Cook was the first guy who had an entire ship with sailors on it for months at sea, and they came back, and not a single one of them had died. And they figured out, you know, what it was that was causing scurvy.
Well, this is like that whole thing where they were trying to figure out how to cure the swine flu, and so they would just have people infected with swine flu stand in front of other people and go, and just, like, cough right into their noses and mouths. And then they would just start to, like, wait and just stare at the guy, just see how long it would take for him to develop the sniffles or something. And you realize that whatever one wants to say about our modern system of healthcare, we really have come leaps and bounds since then. I mean, it's, you know, there really are demonstrable strides and advancements that we have made.
Yeah, now we have robots that we put into rooms with guys.
Stab you in the eye.
And just punch them repeatedly so they can figure out how to hurt a guy.
I wonder
or
if
not.
Scurvy is caused by putting a corkscrew into your ear. Let's find out. All right. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for... By the way, you know, the thing about the robot in Sweden that just is in a basement shiving a guy? It just... I'm surprised that there hasn't been some passel of nerds who have gone over there and just, like, stormed that place like the Bastille because he's teaching the robot to violate the first law of robotics, you know?
Yeah, there should be, like, a PETA for robots.
There totally should. We should form that organization. Where it's wrong, it's like how it's wrong to train pit bulls to fight.
Right.
It's wrong to train robots to stab and pummel and rape.
Exactly, because it's against their nature.
Seriously.
It's abusive.
And you are warping the robot's sense of his own place in the grand scheme of creation. Somebody needs to do that.
Okay.
All right, but that's not going to be me who does that. We should farm that out.
We're focused on that coming up with a new fetish thing.
Yeah.
So we don't have time for robots.
No, we should give this to like a Thomas Gill or a Cable Hashitani or somebody. Just
yeah.
be like, hey, I got a project for you. Okay, awesome.
The NFL confirms quarterback Brett Favre has submitted his retirement papers with the league. Earlier this month, Favre said he wouldn't have changed a thing about his career.
We should stop them from creating that Favre bot that just shows you its penis, you know, at every opportunity.
I was going to say, he wouldn't change anything about his career, not even the sending photos of his penis.
What's so sad is that, like, he is one of the greatest players in NFL history. And then, but it's like the whole thing about how with Dan Rather, now all I remember Dan Rather is him, like, waving a bunch of crap that somebody printed out in Photoshop and going, these are real! All I'm going to remember now of Brett Favre is just, you know, he's waggling his penis around in front of a camera. That's it. Let's see. I'm sorry, what?
This is him saying he wouldn't have changed a thing about his career.
Okay.
One game, one season does not define me.
One penis picture?
There'll be people say, hey, you know, it's a shame he went out that way or did this and that.
Yeah, okay.
Favre defended his decision to come back this past season.
He owned a market, a product called Farva Beans.
Yeah.
This year did not work out the way we would have hoped, but that's football. And I don't regret coming back.
The thing about that guy is, like, I can snark all I want, but you know that he's just going to go home and he's going to be sitting there just on a throne made out of money. You know, and it's going to be one of those things where he just sits all day as an endless line of people wanting him to put his face or his signature on products for billions of dollars just comes in the door, alternating with, like, you know, the Blazers humping horse, you know.
Yeah. And then his meth-addicted sister coming to the back door and asking for bail money.
No, you see, the thing is, if you're Brett Favre, you've got people to keep her away. And you can construct a moat filled with sharks or lava of some kind. That would be the first thing I did. Seriously, some people are like, you know, when I get money, I'm going to buy my mom's a house, you know, or whatever. Or, you know, I get a lot of money. The first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to give half to fight malaria. You know, not me. If I get enough money, the first thing I'm doing is I'm building some sort of an electrified moat around my home. And then there's going to be like a sort of like an electronic bridge that lowers. And it's not going to have like... You won't have a key to operate it. It's just going to operate, and so there'll be some sort of an electronic code you can use on the other side to lower, like the gangway or the plank or whatever that is. And then I will change the code randomly and at whim to disallow those of whom I disapprove, so that they may not enter my home.
Well, have you ever seen any photos of Penn Jillette's home in Las Vegas?
No, I have not.
He has this big concrete house out, like, sort of, you know, desertish outside of Las Vegas. That he calls the Slammer, because it looks vaguely prison-like, and it's surrounded by an enormous chain-link fence with barbed wire on the top.
That's fantastic.
And there's a call box next to the gate that looks like the kind you call to get into a facility.
Yeah.
Except the thing is, apparently, that doesn't actually operate, because he's Penn Jillette, so he has all kinds of things in his house that are, like, trickery and fun. There's what looks to be a payphone, a public payphone at the end of the driveway at the street. And that's what you use to call the house to get the gate open, to come in. The actual call
nothing.
Box at the gate does nothing.
I wholeheartedly approve of that. See, that is exactly the kind of home where I would live. Where it's like, you know, or just, or like, you know, Hunter Thompson, who I think just had like a fortified compound that I think at one point, until the sheriff told him that he could face some prison time for that, I think he was actually experimenting with putting a series of, like, landmines, you know.
Trebuchets.
Yeah, just sort of, you know, randomly spaced between his front door, you know, to the outside path that led to the rest of the world, you know, and only he would know the location, which is fine. If you can't misuse your wealth, what's the point of having it?
Big pots of boiling oil to dump from the second story onto salesmen.
It really does. It makes you see the appeal of just buying an island somewhere that's more than 12 miles offshore, you know, so you can just be a... Or like living at that Sealand place. So you can just, you know, you can just be a law unto yourself. I don't know why more people don't live there. You know, I'm talking about that Sealand where it's like its own country. I mean, that would be the first place I moved. I wouldn't even vacation there. I would just live there. So it's just, you know, it seems like it's a thing that, you know, that is the whole point of having wealth, right? Is so you can keep people you dislike far away from you.
Yes.
Okay.
Let's do science.
Here's your science on the march. For Tuesday, January 18th, 2011.
According to USA Today, almost half of U.S. undergraduates learn nothing in their first 2 years of college.
Well done.
The reason? Universities don't make undergraduate instruction a priority. While professors are busy trying to secure research grants, students are spending 75% of their time sleeping and socializing. They spend a mere 7% of their time studying, according to a survey of 3,000 students on 29 campuses across the country.
Of course, by definition, they were only able to survey the students who were actually awake to answer the question, so the figure is probably closer to 90.
That's 50% less time hitting the books than a few decades ago. The specifics of the study are unsettling. 45% of students made almost no improvement in critical thinking, analytic reasoning, or writing skills during their first 2 years of college.
Excellent.
Another 36% demonstrated only small improvement. The only skill they acquire, it seems, is shirking, said New York University professor Richard Arum. Students are able to navigate through the system quite well with little effort.
I have to tell you, just based on my own anecdotal evidence and experience, that really college students are some of the dumbest people on earth. And I'm not saying that the people who go to college are dumb. It is, like, literally, it is just something that lasts for, like, 4 to 8 years. It lasts the length of your stay in college. But, you know, people, like young people and teenagers and high school students are far smarter than we give them credit for. Children in general are. You know, and then adults are like everybody else. You know, 90% of them are losers. But, you know, but they all fall on some part of that spectrum. And then there's like 10% that really accomplish everything. College students, almost without exception, though, are just deeply, deeply dense.
Well, the problem is, and I observed this from 10 years of living near the University of Portland campus on a street where there were many off-campus houses, including one right next door to me, which one season we had the rugby team, and that was awesome. But I came to the conclusion, particularly with the University of Portland, because it's a private Catholic college, and to see these kids right out of high school, they're given freedom for the first time in their life, plus they are being sent to a Catholic college, so they probably have had, you know, a somewhat restrictive, you know, home life up until this point. And now it's like, hey, and here, you're living on your own. And there's bars nearby, and you can order pizza whenever you want, and you can have parties. And the thing is, they're like 18, 19 years old. So they haven't developed the reasoning skills yet to figure out how to handle freedom. And so it's kind of like you shove them out at this point when it's like, you know, and yeah, they're not necessarily stupid, but it's kind of this thing of like, woo, I can do whatever I want. I have no idea what that means.
Well, to me, it's just, and this is not everybody, but, you know, but a great number of college students, the problem is that there's a whole section, I think, of the college-going community that they embody all of the worst traits that we loathe in very poor or very rich people, in that they are under the impression that they are in control over the mastery of their own destinies, or that they have some sort of knowledge or experience about the real world, when in fact everything is just being paid for by somebody else, and they have no actual concerns because everything about their lives is being managed by and funded by another group or another entity altogether with money that they themselves did not earn. So that is, again, that's not everybody, but there's a whole section, there's a whole swath of the college-going populace that embodies all of those traits.
Yeah, I watched a lot of the kids on my street who seemed to be under the impression that because they were living in a house that was like 5 blocks from campus, that they were essentially on campus, and therefore anything they did was okay. And they would be genuinely surprised when the police would come to parties and bust them for underage drinking, or for throwing things off the roof, or for putting furniture on their front lawn. they really, really were surprised that they actually could get in trouble for these things.
You're going to make a great old person, by the way. I'm just picturing you just there, just like angrily pulling open the curtains and like your eyes sort of narrowing as you peer out into the night, you know, just full of hate for all the college students on your street.
Actually, that's my husband. He does that. He's that guy. He's the Gladys Kravitz.
Really?
He's the one. Every time he hears some commotion outside, he like goes to the window and looks. And I'm like, what? He's like, there's stuff going on. I'm like, and it affects you how?
I really just picture you as like just like Endora from Bewitched, you know, just sort of like staring out and like your hand creeping closer to the phone waiting to call the man.
No.
All right.
Cases of Four Loko from around the country are being shipped to a Virginia-based waste disposal company that's recycling Four Loko into ethanol fuel. After federal authorities declared alcohol-laced energy drinks like Four Loko to be dangerous for consumption, wholesalers started looking for ways to unload themselves of the drinks. That's when they began turning to MXI Environmental Services in Virginia. We're equipped to process 4 truckloads a day, and we're at full capacity, said Brian Potters, vice president at the Abington, Virginia facility. He went on to say in an interview with the Associated Press that there are about 30 different products involved, and we've only seen a couple of them at this point. It could go on for several months.
If you're an alcoholic, this must be the saddest story you've heard all day. They must just line up outside like they're at the Wailing Wall. Just, you know, just watching cases and cases of Four Loko just be dumped into some sort of a crushing machine where it's just sort of squashed and liquefied and dumped down a drain. It'd be like those stories where the guys are burning the huge bales of pot, where there's the DEA and they're just, you know, as you can see, this machine is set up to incinerate thousands of pounds of cocaine every moment. And then they, you know, cut over and there's just some huge dump truck going and just pouring cocaine into an incinerator. And at home, there's just a guy on the couch just weeping in uncontrollable sorrow.
Well, yeah, they say they can process 4 truckloads a day. Each truck holds 2,000 cases of the 23-ounce cans. 2,000 cases.
And the case holds how many?
12.
Okay.
23-ounce cans. But yeah, they're doing 4 truckloads a day. The liquid is being distilled down to ethanol, which is being blended into gasoline for vehicles, and the aluminum cans will be sold to a recycler and could be back on the shelves as a new beer can in 30 days.
By the way, I should say that I don't know if anything is going to come of this, but when I was at the release party for Aaron Duran's comic book, speaking of disposal sites and places where they, you know, where they convert stuff into other stuff, we have a listener. I don't want to say anything yet because I'm trying to see if we can get this lined up. So you remember last week I was talking about those places where they have shredders that can actually shred cars? We have a listener who actually operates one of those.
I met him.
Did you meet him? Was he still there?
I met him. He was still there when I was at
awesome.
The thing. And he told me that he said, I got it. I got this shredder. I got this thing. I said, oh, Rick will be so excited to hear that. He goes, oh, Rick was already here earlier.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes. He was excited.
Oh, no. I sort of make a note to myself. I'm like, car shredding guy, possible guest. He's going to talk to his boss. And we may or may not get a chance to go out there. But even if that's not possible, he's going to get some video of it at some point.
Okay.
And I asked him, I'm like, what's the biggest thing you could shred? And he said, I don't know, an SUV probably. And I said, well, you mean like all at once? He's like, oh, yeah, just dump it right in. And I said, well, what size are the pieces that come out? And he's like, I don't know, size of a baseball, which is
wow.
Just fascinating. And he's like, occasionally a guy will just show up with a dump truck full of refrigerators and just go and just dump the whole thing in and like out the other side. It just comes out just itty little bits of refrigerator confetti.
I want to see that.
So awesome. And he said that... I guess for reasons that make sense if you think, but he said that he's not really able to call while operating the machine.
Yeah, that's what he told me. He said, it's loud.
It's a little loud, he said. So, yeah, no, we're looking into that.
Yay.
Field trip.
Men who feel sick after having sex may be suffering because they're allergic to their own semen, according to Dutch researchers. The illness, referred to as post-orgasmic illness syndrome, or POIS, has flu-like symptoms that appear immediately after orgasm and can stick around for up to a week. The condition has been documented in medical journals since 2002, but it is only now that this has been suggested as a cause.
Scientists are so easily fooled.
The study, published yesterday in the online Journal of Sexual Medicine, states the cause of POIS is an allergy to the man's own semen as it is triggered by ejaculation.
Uh-huh.
43 Dutch men took part in the study. 33 of the subjects consented to a skin prick allergy test with their own system, of which 29 had a positive test. So, yeah, so they gave them the skin prick test with their own semen, and 29 of them tested had a positive allergic reaction.
How does that work if you're carrying it around inside you the whole time?
I don't know.
I call shenanigans on this. This is really the instant after the act is concluded. Where the guy looks, you know, he has a moment of clarity, you know, for the first time in probably a couple hours and says, Oh, wow. Really? Is this the best I thought I could do tonight? Oh,
I gotta go home. I think I'm coming down with something.
Yeah, baby, I got a headache. I don't know. I've just got a little... do you have any water? Are you gonna... I don't want to get you sick. I mean, I'd feel bad if you know. I mean, you're a great... I'll call you. Do you have a phone? You gave me your number. No. I'll just... You do... I gotta go. Bye. Gone. And then, you know, and then you wait about a week. You know, and then a week later, you just, you know, it's 2 a.m. and you're dialing for dollars and nobody's home. And, you know, and so then maybe, you know, maybe you ring her up again. So... I just, it seems like this is one of those things where they're looking for a scientific explanation when the real answer is much more obvious but eluding them.
I don't know. Marcel Waldinger, a professor of sexual psychopharmacology at Utrecht University in the Netherlands, says that this could be a very important breakthrough in the research of this syndrome.
Is he of the Glasgow Bay Waldingers?
He is indeed.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. Is that science there?
That's all the science.
All right, there you go. There's your Science on the March for Tuesday, January 18th, 2000. And 11 brought to you by Squires Electric. You can find them at squireselectric.com. That is squireselectric.com or 503-252-1609. 503-252-1609. Maybe you understand electricity. Maybe you understand wiring. Maybe you understand how to take care of your house cosmetically. So if you fix something, you repair something, you take something out of the wall, you put it back, you know how to cover that up reasonably well. Maybe you know these things, but with Squires Electric, you do not have to because, you know, it's not just about the knowledge. It's about the work. It's about the time. I mean, it's like, you're a busy person. You got stuff to do. And so the idea that you got to set aside hours and hours and sometimes days and weeks of your life to try to chase down some gremlin in the electrical system, and then you got to take the wiring out, you got to replace it, you got to spackle things up, you got to put up your drywall, you got to repaint. The hell with that. You know, you got people for that, and that is Squires Electric. They can figure out what is wrong with your electrical system, and they can make sure that it is functioning properly by the time they leave. And if you need it installed or if you need it upgraded, they can handle that as well. It's 503-252-1609. Free estimates so you can know up front about what you're going to pay. 503-252-1609. If it has to do with wires or wiring in your home or business, they can make your life easier. They are Squires Electric, and they bring you your Science on the March for Tuesday. Here is Don Taylor.
Torrential rains are causing creeks and rivers to overflow their banks in northwest Oregon. Along the Sandy River, this man lost his home to the 2006 floods. He finally moved into a new home in September, but now the rising waters are threatening that one as well.
You're a little apprehensive here and on edge with this much volume going and this much debris moving again.
This is what happens when you escape the death that the logging truck clearly had planned for you. Then there is no safe place.
So I'm interested that in 2006, this guy lost his home mm-hmm. when the Sandy River flooded.
Right.
And he moved into a new home. So
was it across the street from the old home?
Yeah. So, but apparently he moved into another home on the Sandy River.
Yeah. Here's the thing. I don't want to quash any sort of illusions that may have been keeping you mentally afloat in this world of ours. A lot of people in this world make bad decisions over and over and over again. Really, there are whole states in this fine union of ours that God seems bent on destroying, but, you know, people continue to live there.
This man says he can actually hear the debris being swept up by the rising waters of the Sandy River.
You can hear the boulders rolling, and it sounds like a bowling alley.
You know, it is that thing, too, where there were... Well, we talked about the two houses that actually had just slid into nothingness. But what sucks even more... I mean, as I said the other day, it's like those guys who build on the cliff sides in L.A. or something, you know, or anywhere in Southern California. Or they build right on a fault line, and then they just express all of this surprise when nature just comes and gets rid of their home. But... So that's bad. What's even worse, though, is if you really are just some guy who's living, like, miles from the river or where you would expect anything like this to happen, and then there's just one of those huge mudslides, like a St. Helens mudslide, that just comes along and just whisks your house away and turns it into kindling. That's a thing you really can't plan for that.
Yeah, growing up in Southern California, about every 6 or 7 years, there would be, like, some kind of a horrible storm, and there'd be giant waves, and there'd be news footage of people going out with sandbags to try to protect the rich people's homes in Malibu.
No.
And I'm just kind of... And I was just never able to work up a whole lot of sympathy for Martin Sheen and his $20 million beachfront home.
And by the way, you know... sandbag schmanbag, like there's no, I mean, that's like those guys, and I understand why you do it, it's part of the human survival instinct, but when there's like those, like you get those like Santa Ana winds that rip those firestorms through everywhere, and you always just see some guy out there with like a bucket, you know, or he's just like, he's got a garden hose, and he's standing, and there's a wall of flame like 3 miles high and 40 miles across advancing on him, and he's got, You know, he's got effectively a squirt gun.
You won't take me alive.
I regret nothing except this. You know, and it's, you know, I mean, I get why people do that, but it's really, at a certain point, I think you got to cash out. Taylor.
Police say a fake valet at a Massachusetts emergency room offered to park a pregnant woman's car and then drove away with it. Lowell, Massachusetts Captain Kelly Richardson told the Boston Herald the woman drove herself to Lowell General Hospital at 3 a.m. Friday while suffering labor pains. She parked outside the emergency room doors and was met by a man wearing a uniform-style shirt who introduced himself as the valet. The man said she couldn't park there but volunteered to take her keys and move the car. Then police say he drove away.
Are you just picturing this like a Family Guy cutaway scene where she just sort of, you know, all right, here you go. And he goes, okay, that's great, thanks. And he gets in, and then it's just a static shot of him just sort of driving off. And then she just sort of stands there and just watches him, like, you know, go around the corner and down the hill and over the bridge, you know, and just sort of...
up the mountain.
Okay.
While being admitted, the woman was told the driver that the hospital didn't offer a valet service. The car was found Saturday morning. Police are examining it for fingerprints and other evidence.
That's fantastic. I do admire people who just, they spot cracks in the system. Just little weaknesses in the fortifications against crime that man has erected. And then they are able to thrive in those areas. So well done in a theoretical sense, sir. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Still to come, we got your entertainment news. And next hour, the Rick Emerson radio program. We got your Clown Watch coming up, Geek Watch coming up, Religious Nutcase Watch, and the top five segments or sections of songs with which everybody in the room must sing along. Oh, and I'll tell you, because I know that you're something of a fan. I'll tell you about Seth Aaron, who I interviewed this morning for Outlook Portland.
Yeah.
So that was an interesting experience. So we'll talk about that.
Okay.
This is Don Taylor.
The House is set to debate repealing the health care reform package. Republican Congressman Steve King concedes that the Democrat-controlled Senate won't go along with the idea, but he believes now is the time for the House to at least take the first step.
What is this, a health one?
Yes.
No scenario that could be laid out by anyone to repeal Obamacare could be laid out without including this vote that we start the debate today and we'll vote on tomorrow to repeal it in the House.
Here's how you know that this guy's doing a good job, because every time he speaks and says something like that, you roll your eyes. That is really, and you know what? And every time you roll your eyes, like, it's like a Republican gets another mistress. It really is just, you can just hear a little bell ringing, you know? And it's like, and their stock portfolio goes up by 4% every time they make a liberal cry. Well done, Steve King.
Obamacare. King acknowledges that it will take a long-term strategy over a couple of years to achieve repeal.
We first have to pass a repeal in the House with a new Republican majority, and then shut off the funding to implement or enforce Obamacare in our appropriations bills throughout 2011 and 2012. Then, 2012, we elect a president who hopefully runs on the platform, among them being to sign the repeal of Obamacare.
Here's what's so great about this guy and the Republicans in general is that, A, he managed to use the phrase Obamacare like 7 times.
Yeah.
Which, A, energizes the base. B, it irritates, you know, insert liberal think tank group here. And also, this is why Republicans continue to win and Democrats continue to just, you know, sort of sit like little Jack Horner. Because he, like, laid out the whole, like, here's what we're going to do this year, then here's what we're going to do next year, and then when we get our fourth consecutive Republican president in and liberals are ensconced in underground sugar mines serving their reptilian overlords, this is the step we will take at that point. And they've obviously got, like, a sort of master plan, a final solution, if you will, to the entire, you know, to the entire thing. They've got it planned out from, like, A to Z.
So, I also really admire the very straight-ahead
there's no illusions
admission.
There.
We are going to run a presidential candidate, and his primary position is going to be to screw up health care for everyone.
Well,
no health care reform. We're going to keep it the status quo. We health care is awesome the way it is now. You guys are all doing great, and so we don't health care reform.
Well, let's be fair, we should point out that the Obama administration's health care plan is exactly what liberals said they didn't like when Mitt Romney proposed it.
Well, yeah.
So there is no everything that. This is the sort of, and really you have to admire liberals in this way, and I say this as like the massive bleeding heart, but I can recognize the faults in people on my own side of the ideological spectrum. You almost have to admire liberals because they have this completely, like, shifting sand perspective, which is what you need, because you can't be fixed to any... Like Republicans. To use Mitt Romney as an example, you know, who was pro-choice until he decided he was going to run for president, and then suddenly he was pro-life. And liberals who hated the health care plan in Massachusetts because Mitt Romney was behind it, and then loved it once it was the Obama administration's idea, and don't want it to be gotten rid of. So I just, you know... It seems fundamentally wrong to me that the government should be telling me that I have to purchase something.
Yes, I agree with.
And the analogy that it's the same as car insurance is not the same, because even though you need a car in many places, you don't actually have to have a car. The idea that the government is going to force me to buy something strikes me as a little bit, you know, that's a thing that I could do with. I could do without, as somebody once said, I'd be happy if the government didn't even know I existed. So the idea that they're just going to come and jack me for even more money strikes me as a thing I could do without. But, I mean, you know, what are you going to do? So that's you know, you just have to go into this with this sort of understanding that there is no truth to be had on either side of this issue from either party.
Yes, I agree.
There you go.
Rick
that
Emerson.
Is your lesson for today.
There we have it.
There you go.
And the more you know. Spanish police arrested 25 people and confiscated 300 kilograms of cocaine in a bus of Europe's largest and most sophisticated cocaine laboratory, according to the BBC. After 2 years of surveillance, police raided the factory outside of Madrid this morning, seizing 33 tons of chemicals, more than $2.6 million in cash, a cache of weapons, 18 luxury vehicles, 470 mobile phones, and share certificates worth $67 million. Authorities say the lab was jointly run by Spaniards and Colombians, and the suspects are believed to have used containers of coffee to smuggle cocaine into Europe.
Okay, then.
After years of anonymity, street artist Banksy's identity may be revealed to one lucky eBay bidder after a high-stakes auction closes tomorrow.
Is he Carly Simon?
I hope so. I hope it's Carrot Top. With 33 bids and 26 hours to go, bidding is currently stalled at $999,999 for the item in question, a piece of paper with Banksy's legal name written on it. I don't believe anyone has actually bid that.
No, I believe this is a piece of performance art.
I believe that
we are all
indeed.
Pretending is a news story.
Yes. The seller claims to have discerned Banksy's identity by matching up the prices of his sold pieces to corresponding tax records. According to Banksy's website, not all Banksy work that is sold necessarily corresponds to the artist himself. Galleries profit off secondhand sales.
Don't care.
Yeah, I don't care.
I mean, I'm all for a guy getting publicity however you want to get publicity, but I don't have
That's
to go along with it.
That's just stupid.
Yeah. And I don't have to crawl a grown man Banksy.
No. And is the documentary about him that everyone thought was, so many people thought was just delightful and edgy?
Which,
stupid.
Which?
Exit Through the Gift Shop.
Oh, you know, that's a thing that Netflix keeps telling me I should watch. Because it's based on your other, you know, interests, we think, and by the way, they mean based on things my wife has watched.
Yeah, Netflix is wrong.
Yeah, no, every time it comes up, I swat that thing away like a whack-a-mole. Yeah, no.
Let's do our entertainment news.
By the way, if you watch our Netflix queue at home, you can see the totally schizophrenic nature of viewing in our household, because all it suggests are just things about, like, you know, like, I don't know, like the touching tragic story of some organic farmer somewhere, you know, who was run out of business by Scrooge McDuck, or just things about Metallica and Richard Nixon. So that is, you know, it really is. It is a sort of marbled cake of movie recommendations.
Yeah, mine's all screwed up now because Patrick kept watching anime. So now it just keeps telling me that
Would you like to go to prison for child molestation? All right. Let's see. What do we have here? What are we doing?
We're doing entertainment news.
Let me ask you this. Does Patrick just ever feel... Does he ever feel a weird, like a shared sense of awkwardness because... Because anime does have, how do I put this? Because there are so many, like, strange people and subcultures attached to anime, as distinct from many other things, or to a greater degree than other things. You know what I mean?
I don't think so, because I know, because he doesn't, you know, he doesn't have anything to do with the subculture.
So he doesn't, like, does he go to, like, anime, like, cons or anything?
No, God, no.
Oh, see, well, I did, you know, I don't know.
No, he likes cartoons. And so he's, and then, and because of that, he also likes a lot of anime. Not all anime, but, He likes a lot of anime, and he likes a lot of anime that I don't understand why he likes it. Like, they've started rerunning Dragon Ball Z on Saturday morning, and he sits there and watches Dragon Ball Z, which I don't get that at all.
I just think that every time I see, you know, it's like you'll see somebody's SIG file or something, and it's like some really weird, like, sexed up Sailor Moon avatar or something, and I think it must be really difficult to be a normal fan of anime sometimes, because you talk about just being lumped in with, you know, with just, like, the freak table in the cafeteria.
Yeah. Now, he watches Bleach, whatever that is, and Naruto, and, you know, he had introduced me to Cowboy Bebop, which I really liked a lot, but not, you know, most of it leaves me completely cold, but, you know, God bless him, he enjoys it.
Do we ever figure out what happened to Samurai Jack? Is that a thing that just went away? Like,
yeah.
They just sneezed and it was gone one day?
Yeah, it just disappeared. Jenny Tarkovsky, right. I guess not enough people were watching it or something.
You know what I'd like to master? I would like to master the accent for Dexter from Dexter's Laboratory, and just
yeah.
In a couple of years, wheel that out as a quirky sort of retro voice that I can do. But it's difficult because I can't figure out what kind of accent it is.
No.
It's like Ren Hoek. You know, I can never really put my finger on what accent that's supposed
to
be.
Yeah, it's kind of German, but kind of not.
It's like a weird Eastern Bloc thing, but then like filtered through like Havana somehow. All right, here's Don Taylor.
Martha Stewart got a split lip after her dog accidentally headbutted her.
Accidentally.
And was rushed to the emergency room for stitches. She wrote on her blog, "As I leaned down to whisper goodbye to a dozing Francesca, I must have startled her because she bolted upright with such force she hit me in the face like a boxing glove hitting an opponent."
Put little booties on me.
Stewart had one of her staff document the experience. If you go to her blog, there are over 30 pictures of her trip to the hospital. I have uploaded one to Martha's rickemerson.com pictures, including one where she just takes a picture of like some really ugly wallpaper border up by the ceiling. And then underneath of it writes, "I really think they need to update the wallpaper, don't you?"
It must be weird if, like, Martha Stewart does come to your, like, I don't know, like, if she just, like, stops in at your Waffle House to use the bathroom or something, and then you immediately just wonder, like, oh, God, like, if it's going to be referenced on some, like, some upcoming episode of Martha Stewart, like, I was at the most atrocious Waffle House the other day, and it was like my eyes were having salt poured into them.
And with Martha, she could go either way. She could just say that, you know, the Waffle House was horrible, or she could go on TV and say, "I stopped at the Waffle House, and they had the most adorable salt shakers,
right.
And I thought you could make mini vases out of them."
There's really no, there's no middle ground there. It could go one of two ways.
Anderson Cooper is on his way to Broadway. The CNN newsman will voice the narrator in the upcoming How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying production, starring Daniel Radcliffe. Cooper's involvement isn't unprecedented. In 1995, Walter Cronkite performed the same duties in the revival that starred Matthew Broderick.
That's pretty great.
This incarnation of the musical, which is celebrating its 50th anniversary, begins previews on February 26th at the Al Hirschfeld Theater.
I'm not a huge fan of that. Well, I haven't seen the play. I've only seen the movie. But I'm not a huge fan of that. But, I mean, you got to give him props for getting Anderson Cooper. That's pretty great.
I really do not like that musical very much at all. But, you know, go Anderson Cooper.
Hey.
Regis Philbin announced this morning this would be his last year on his syndicated talk show, Live with Regis and Kelly, which he's hosted for 28 years. "I don't want to alarm anybody, but this will be my last year on the show," he said. "There's a time for everything, that everything must come to an end for certain people on camera, especially certain old people."
So, is he still doing the Who Wants to Be a Millionaire show somewhere?
No.
Like
that,
on the Game Show Network or something?
No, he hasn't done that for a number of years. Meredith Vieira took over for him.
But is it still on?
It's on in some, yeah.
Does it air on some cable channel or something?
Yeah, I think it is on, like, during the day on ABC in syndication or something like that.
So is this going to be one of those things where they have to, like, where then they have to get somebody, some guy with whose name starts with R, you know, to, you know, like how every time, like, the guys in Emerson, Lake, and Palmer would fire somebody, they would have to go, like, you know, I don't know, we need a P. Do you know a guy starts with a P and he drums? You know, because now it's just going to be whoever, because the show's going to continue without him, right? It'll be Kelly Ripa and, like, some other guy.
But, of course, they replaced Kathy Lee
with Kelly Ripa.
So, yeah. It's going to have to be somebody with an R.
This isn't an R, but I think we know the answer to that, Don.
David Spade.
This isn't an R. Why don't they give Weird Al Yankovic a talk show?
I don't know.
You'd watch that. Everyone would watch that. And here's the thing. Even people who don't really consider themselves fans of Weird Al Yankovic would watch it because he's funny. He's contemporary, he's well-known, he's likable, and he's unthreatening, but not in a toothless sort of way. I think if you gave Weird Al Yankovic, like, it sounds dumb, but if you put him on, like, Good Morning America or something, I'm telling you right now, that's money in the bank.
Maybe he doesn't want to do a talk show, though.
Well, that's probably could be a step down, you know, from his current elevated, plateau as king of the geek world in his perspective. Who knows? But I'm just saying, that's a thing. You mark my words. He could do that.
It'd probably be less work than traveling around and touring and singing his songs and going to state fairs and clubs.
See, I'm saying that right now, and it's like somebody, though, will do that within the next 2 or 3 years.
In a surprise announcement, Nicole Kidman and Keith Urban announced the December arrival of Faith Margaret Kidman Urban, who was born through a gestational carrier on December 28th in Nashville.
Is that where you just get some crack mom to carry the kid and then you take it away?
Yes.
Okay. I mean, not that they did that, but I mean, is it like that?
Well, they're Australian, so they probably got an Aborigine. A spokesperson for the duo said the baby is Urban and Kidman's biological child and issued this statement for the couple.
I have a handful of shiny stones. Will you carry my child?
Our family is truly blessed and just so thankful to have been given the gift of baby Faith Margaret. No words can adequately convey the incredible gratitude we feel for everyone who is so supportive through the process, in particular, our gestational carrier.
A gestational carrier? A gestational carrier sounds like either... It sounds like something that would transmit avian flu. Well, we believe the gestational carrier was this man. He was on an airline flight coming from London to New York.
I just think about this. This kid is going to grow up, and someday she will be, like, you know, a teenager, an adult. And she will look back, and it's like, this was the announcement we made to tell the world that you had arrived. And it uses the phrase gestational carrier.
Seriously. I mean,
that sounds like something like
the H.R. Giger would come up with.
Well, it sounds like how you'd give people swine flu.
Is that a thing where, like, do they put the kid then into Nicole Kidman at some point?
No, I believe that it was someone who carried the child.
It's just adoption.
No, it's not, because it was
right. Well, somebody else has the kid, and then you take it.
I guess, but I think contractually there's something else going on there. Because
or did the kid come from them?
Yes, it came from them. It was his semen and her egg, but then they implant the fertilized egg into someone else to carry it.
Well, look, I don't mean to pry, and we got to end the show here in a second, but. What is up with her insides? I mean, is that a thing where it's like there's just...
She's probably just had so much plastic surgery that she would burst at the seams if she got pregnant.
They had to liquefy her. They had to liquefy her womb and inject it into her buttocks at one point.
She would just split open like a ripe peach.
Oh, it's good to laugh at others. All right, this has been another exciting installment of Legion of News. Thank you for joining us. It is Tuesday. Don't forget the Rick Emerson Show comes up next hour at rickemersonshow.com, where you can enjoy more of this merriment and unbridled cruelty for just pennies a day. 32 of them to be exact. You can find out more at rickemersonshow.com. We got a Clown Watch coming up, Geek Watch, Religious Nutcase Watch, and a Top 5. As always, we come to you Monday through Friday from noon to 1 right here at Cascadia.fm at the news desk. Don Taylor, Advanced Technology and Magic provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, Executive Producer Bruce Agler, Chief of Staff Cheryl Kanakoa. As always, thank you for listening. Have a satisfying Tuesday, won't you?